It was an unknown wilderness. It wasn't long before they went into the wide valleys of Kentucky through the Cumberland Gap.
Welcome to this edition of Old Kentucky Tales, the only podcast that solemnly swears that none of its participants have ever shipped a possum to a London zoo. Today's title is Playing Possum with John James Audubon. I am your host, Brent Taylor, Assistant Professor of History at West Kentucky Community and Technical College. Unfortunately, Jason Donner could not be with us today, so instead, with me is the one and only Mitch. Hey, Mitch.
Hey. How you doing there, Brent? Here I am.
I
gotta tell you, I'm a little bit nervous about this now.
No, don't be nervous. You're going to be great.
Is this going out on the radio right now?
Yes, it is live.
Oh, that does not help. That does not
help. Don't drop any F-bombs.
Ugh.
All right? We can't have that. In this episode of Old Kentucky Tales, we will hear the words behind U.S. Grant's invasion of Paducah in our Rock the Quote segment. And for our main event, we will look at John James Audubon and his opossums. And along the way, don't forget to support the fake history sponsors, real products that fakely support Old Kentucky Tales. In our Rock the Quote segment, Mitch, we're going to look at U.S. Grant. That's the guy on the $50 bill. You probably like him, right?
Oh, yeah. I like that a lot. Uh-huh.
He's probably your second favorite guy.
Whoever's on the 100, I couldn't tell you.
Yeah, that's it. $100 guy, that's your favorite. But then the $50 guy, second favorite, not so bad.
He was a president one time, I guess.
He was a president. Before that, he was a general. And he also invaded Paducah during the Civil War. When he did that, he issued a special statement to the citizens of Paducah.
Uh-huh.
And in it, he said, "I have nothing to do with opinions." U.S. Grant, 1861. So what would that mean to you, Mitch?
I have no idea. I have nothing to do with opinions.
Exactly.
He has no opinion?
He has nothing to do with the people making the policies.
Oh, I see. He's trying to say, hey, I'm just a working man. I was told to invade.
He's a soldier. He's doing what he's told by Abraham Lincoln.
Oh.
And he's here to do a job. He's not here to make anybody's opinion different, to change anybody's mind about anything, but he's got a job to do.
Well, was there like a real resistance or something? They just took over Paducah, but they weren't really invading.
It's an invasion of sorts. Now, it is kind of, it's interesting that you ask that question because.
Of course it is.
Every question's good.
I'm still very nervous.
No, you're doing great.
All right.
Because that was a tremendous question.
Yeah.
And Kentucky was in between on the Civil War. We were technically still part of the Union, still part of the country. We did not quit America like 11 states did.
Of course not.
We didn't. But at the same time, and especially in this region, there was a lot of sentiment that was in tune with the Confederacy, especially this western section, the Jackson Purchase region. They really liked the Confederacy here. And Grant himself could sense that. And he made statements about that. And that's why he was here saying, look, this isn't about my opinion, your opinion.
Right.
I've got the job to do. And we have a job to do, Mitch. One of the things that we do here is we pay the bills.
Hold on now. I ain't going to pay anybody's bills. I got roped into this thing. Y'all gave me this hat. I like it a lot. It fits real good, and I love it. But I ain't paying nothing.
You don't have to pay the bills. Our sponsors pay the bills. And right now, we are going to hear a word from those sponsors.
We will pay $100 to any man with a case of weakness that we treat and fail to cure. A magical treatment for the cure of lost vitality, nervous and sexual weakness, and the restoration of life in old and young men. No worn-out French remedy, contains no phosphorus or other harmful drugs. All men suffering from a weakness that blights their life, causing that mental and physical suffering peculiar to their lost manhood, should write to the Safe Medical Company, Omaha, Nebraska, for a free and valuable paper on these diseases and positive proof of their truly magical treatment. Thousands of men have been restored to perfect condition.
So then, Mitch, it's got a $100 guarantee.
Uh-huh.
It's got to work, right? Do you trust that?
I noticed they didn't really tell us what was in the ingredients.
No, that's because it's the 1860s, and like, they don't have to.
Right, right. So they just want you to send it in. Did I understand what it was saying just right? Male problems?
The way you're asking that question tells me that you understood perfectly.
I thought so. It sounded a little bit risque, to tell you the truth.
It is a little risque. In fact, I was surprised to hear that from the 1860s. I sort of expected something like that maybe in the 1880s, 1890s, because that was a really commercial age and a lot of things were for sale and big business was blossoming. I found it to be a little bit early for that, but apparently it's never too early to restore your manly vitality.
Well, I mean, that's always been a problem for folks, I guess, right?
Yeah, a timeless issue. I think you're 100% right about that. And another thing that's timeless is John James Audubon. This guy is famous, especially around the Henderson area. He was an ornithologist.
Okay, all right. You mean he worked on people's teeth?
That's close, Mitch. He was a guy who studied birds for a living.
Oh, okay.
Did a lot of famous paintings,
Yes, uh-huh. Very, very professorial of you there, Brent.
I am a professor, so it makes perfect sense, I think.
Oh, you're making all kinds of sense.
Yeah, dollars and cents from those fake history sponsors.
Go ahead. He liked birds.
He did like birds. But he also studied other things from time to time, and in this particular instance, he was studying the opossum. And this is kind of funny for us because we are so used to possums being around this area.
Oh, they're everywhere. Just like go in the house and they'll come up on the deck.
Yeah, or they'll go inside
the house.
They eat
the cat food. Shut the
door. They love cat food. They love cat food.
Yeah, they love my cat food.
They love dog food. They love anything they get their hands on.
They're a disgusting animal, Brent, I got to tell you.
Well, John James Audubon didn't think so. And as a matter of fact, you already don't like this Audubon guy,
no,
do you?
No, no, give him a chance.
Okay, right, so you're open-minded.
I mean, the possum's got his life
good.
To lead, too.
That's right. And here's the thing. The opossum was not really known in Europe, so it's an exotic animal there.
Uh-huh.
And John James Audubon is describing what this thing is like. That's part of what he made his job.
Okay, so he's writing something. These people, they've never seen one in their life. So they're trying to explain to it what
it is.
If
you had never seen an opossum, this source is for you.
Right.
Now, we've seen the opossum. It's interesting for us to see that difference.
You mean there are none like in Europe or anything? They're just in
North America. And it's going to be really clear here in a minute because he actually had a special mission to send opossums to Europe.
Okay, go ahead.
We're going to see about it.
Go ahead.
So here's John James Audubon. There cannot be a better exemplification of maternal tenderness than the female opossum. So he likes how they are motherly. He says, just peep into that curious sack in which the young are concealed, each attached to a teat. The kind mother not only nourishes them with care, but preserves them from their enemies. She moves with them as the shark does. And now, aloft on the tulip tree, she hides among the thick foliage. By the end of 2 months, they begin to shift for themselves. Each has been taught its particular lesson, and must now practice it. So he sees beauty then.
he sees beauty in a possum. And he's trying to convince people over there that they should, I don't know.
You ever seen beauty in a possum?
Yeah, well, no. All right, what's going on in there? I see someone's trying to take our picture. No one told me about that. Go ahead.
Hey, we live stream. We do all kinds of things,
well,
Mitch. Just
like
be
I
prepared.
Said, the possum's got a job to do, and if he's got to raise the babies and the teat, so be it. You know what I'm talking about?
Indeed I do, Mitch.
Go ahead now.
But suppose the farmer has surprised an opossum in the act of killing one of his best fowls. So the thing, I mean, it eats anything. We said that. It'll get after the chickens. His angry feelings urge him to kick the poor beast, which, conscious of its inability to resist, rolls off like a ball. The more the farmer rages, the more reluctant is the animal to manifest resentment. At last, there it lies, not dead, but exhausted. Its jaws open, its tongue extended, its eye dimmed. and there it would lie until the bottle fly should come to deposit its eggs. Did not its tormentor at length walk off? Surely, says he to himself, the beast must be dead. But no, dear reader, it is only possuming. And no sooner has its enemy withdrawn than it gradually gets on its legs and once more makes for the woods.
Mm-hmm. Well, I had a thought while you were reading all that.
It was
about the possum.
Yeah.
Well, there's that saying, right? You know, playing possum.
That's it.
Pretending to be dead.
Yeah.
That's like they did. So that, or just whatever, you know, you're just trying to fake somebody out, in other words.
Yeah, that's exactly what this is. He's describing it to people who've never seen it before.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're going to see about the...
Come on, Brent. Come on now. This is your show.
You want me to spit it out? Is that what it is?
Spit it out. Quit.
All right. So he's going to send some of these things over to London. In the year 1829, I was in a portion of Lower Louisiana where the opossum abounds at all seasons, and having been asked by the president and the secretary of the Zoological Society of London to forward live animals of this species to them, I offered a price a little above the common and soon found myself plentifully supplied, 25 having been brought to me. Interesting, right? You put out a possum wanted sign, and people are going to bring 25 different possums to you?
Well, sure, yeah. So he's asking for people to bring them, like, in America.
Yeah.
Bring me a possum.
Yeah.
I need to send
them
to Europe.
And we're going to send them over to Europe so that they can see them. They're an exotic creature over there. They want to know about them.
People must have thought he was crazy. They're everywhere, right?
You know, they surely said to themselves, I don't know why this guy wants one, here we go. They apparently...
Once alive possum. They were alive.
Oh, yeah. Not dead or alive, but alive, because the dead ones aren't going to do us any good in this case. So that's right. I found them excessively voracious and not less cowardly. They were put into a large box with a great quantity of food and conveyed to a steamer bound from New Orleans. 2 days afterwards, I went to the city to see about sending them off to Europe. But to my surprise, I found that the old ones had destroyed the younger ones and had eaten off their heads, and that only 16 remained alive. I wouldn't have expected that. I think he was surprised, too.
Boy, you got gruesome there.
Yeah. The possums.
But they do that. Those little ones will eat all, they'll eat the babies, right?
They're definitely
or did he just
doing
get
something
hungry,
like that
or was
here.
It kind of like getting rid of? Oh, they just ate the little ones.
Yeah. It's territorial. Because they had the food, right? It wasn't a question of food. It was a matter of they didn't want them in there in that same space.
Well, the way you're reading that poetry about possums, I was feeling a lot better. But, man, and now
Yeah, it's not a beautiful poem, is it? A separate box was purchased for each. So that's where you learn a lesson. That's what history can teach you right there, Mitch. If you try to send all these over in one big box, that ain't going to work.
Right. Uh-huh.
So let's get different boxes, and we'll send all the different boxes together.
They don't do well together.
No, they did not play well. That is for sure. And after some time, they reached my friends in Liverpool, who, with their usual attention, sent them off to London, where on my return, I saw a good number of them in the zoological gardens. Now this, I like to imagine this.
Just think about that. Yeah, uh-huh.
We've got to
go ahead.
Come and see our new possum display at the London Zoological Display.
Yeah, going to the zoo over there and then a possum. What's that doing in there? But it's
they
new.
They want to see it. It's
new
it's
to
different.
Them. Exactly.
That's right. New to them. Great way to put it. This animal is fond of grapes, of which a species now bears its name. Persimmons are greedily eaten by it. And in severe weather, I have observed it eating lichens. So that mushroom-like stuff on the side of the tree, apparently.
Oh, I'm glad you said that. I had no idea what you meant by that.
Yeah, that's something that we wouldn't normally eat. But apparently the times get tough, the possum gets tougher.
He eats whatever's left, I guess.
Yeah. Fowls of every kind, quadrupeds, less powerful than itself, are also its habitual prey. So it's an omnivore. It's going to eat anything out there. The flesh of the opossum resembles that of a young pig and would perhaps be as highly prized were it not for the prejudice generally entertained against it. Some very particular persons, to my knowledge, have pronounced it excellent eating. What do you think about that?
What do you mean particular? Particular picky, like starving
picky
folks?
Picky people. No. Picky people love this food, he says.
It's that good. Eating a possum. That's disgusting, Brent.
Are you trying to get people?
No, I have not eaten a possum. I've shooed off a few.
Okay, but you've never eaten one. All right. Apparently, John James Audubon says pretty good stuff. After cleaning its body, here's the recipe. After cleaning its body, suspend it for a whole week in the frosty air, for it is not eaten in the summer. This is just a wintertime dish, Mitch. Then place it on a heap of hot wood embers. Sprinkle it when cooked with gunpowder. There's some seasoning for you, right?
Yeah.
That's like hot
sauce.
This
is gross.
And now tell me, good reader, does it not equal the famed canvasback duck? What do you think? You think this could be as good as duck?
No, I don't. I don't know what happened to this guy. I don't know that he got a possum.
Maybe he ate something else he thought
was a possum.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Maybe some veal or something, and he confused it. Maybe a pigeon.
Yeah. Just knowing that, I don't know. I would just think that'd be kind of gross to eat. But it's still meat. You know, if you didn't know the difference, whatever.
Hey, everything tastes like chicken, right? Or in this case, duck.
It was the olden days, I guess. So they just ate whatever, you know.
They did. I think you are more right about that than you even know. Should you visit any of our markets, you may see it there in company with the best game. So that is, you're looking up there, you go to the grocery store.
Okay.
You see the chicken.
So it's for sale
hanging.
Then.
Yeah. Chicken, turkey, possum. They got them lined right up.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe did. I don't know. That's fine. Whatever.
Whatever floats his ornithological boat. Is that it?
If you say so, Brent. Are we getting, this is about over. Am I wrong?
We are so far from over. You are even more impatient than Jason, which is hard to believe.
This is a whole lot about a possum. I'll say that. I thought this was history. Something about history show.
Yeah, that is weird, right?
Like, yeah.
I guess possums really don't have anything to do with history, do they?
Well, I don't know. I mean, they change people's appetites.
Yeah, there's something there. Maybe we can make it fit into the category of history if we just really imagine. I think you're right about that.
I think you're just trying to gross me out is what it is.
Oh, you caught me.
Yeah.
This isn't about history at all. This is just some sort of sick game to see if we can get you grossed out. That's it.
They got that long, gross tail on them, too. They got like a rat tail, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they got that thing.
He didn't say if you eat that or not. I mean, yeah. I'm kind of imagining spaghetti.
Oh, that tail? Oh, my God.
I mean, why not? He left that to the imagination, so we're not really sure in this particular source. But I am sure about one thing, and that is that our sponsor for this half of the program is the original laxative cough syrup. For all coughs, and assists in expelling colds from the system by gently moving the bowels. A certain relief for croup and whooping cough. Nearly all other cough cures are constipating, especially those containing opiates. Kennedy's laxative honey and tar moves the bowels containing no opiates. Kennedy's laxative containing honey and tar. Prepared at the laboratory of DeWitt and Company, Chicago, USA. J.N. Page, Agent, Columbia, Kentucky.
Uh-huh. Yeah. You picked that one out for me again, didn't you?
Remember, you figured it out earlier. I'm grossing you out.
Well done, sir.
Mission accomplished.
As you talked, I made a mental picture of that.
So what was the mental picture of the laxative
cough
syrup like?
The laxative
cough
syrup. I don't know, but I would hate to see that fella sneeze.
I think you definitely have got the right kind of mental image on this one.
No, this has been a lot more fun than I thought it would because you got some interesting kind of, I don't know, people like to be grossed out. It's no problem. It's cool.
Oh, so you really weren't displeased with being grossed out. You kind of liked it?
It's better than being bored, I'll tell you that much.
All right, we'll take it. But what about a cough syrup that's a laxative? I mean, would you take that?
Again, Brent, make a mental picture of every cough You just, I don't know.
So you
wouldn't
take
it. You're forcing me to talk about this here.
Yeah.
You don't want to be in the room when the guy starts coughing. That's all I can say.
You are 100% right about that.
It might work. It's just got a ways to travel.
Yeah, from point A to point B. Very well put. Now,
let's
you're not
move
familiar
on,
with
Brent.
This.
Yeah, let's move on.
We're going to move on. Don't worry about that. Now, you're not familiar with the process, but when Jason's here, we always have him do a takeaway. And what that means in the education biz is
this hat right here is what I'm taking away.
Oh, you're going to wear that hat right out of the studio?
Yeah, I've already picked it.
All right, perfect.
Or you want to know what I thought of everything?
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
so what
okay.
did you like the most?
Well,
that'll be your
know.
Takeaway.
I don't know. I guess it's easy to think about these animals. You know, you see some gross animal. Figure, you know, that's just the way it's always been. But maybe we can appreciate the animal just as an unusual kind of thing, you know. Never seen one before, then they're interested in it. It's kind of neat, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Very, very thoughtful. I appreciate that. Thanks, Mitch. You are deep. We have now turned to the final chapter. But never fear. More quirky old Kentucky tales are yet to be told. Special thanks to Mitch, to our sound engineer and producer Todd Birdsong, the Paducah School of Art and Design and WKMS, and the rest is history.